Hello and welcome to the Dungeons, Dragons, and Discourse live stream. I am hosting this. I am Eric Tenkar with none other than Glenn Howsam. Some of you might know him best as Old Man Grognard. There he is, showing his lovely face to everybody here on this side of the pond. I'm using one of my bad accents, but I'll step away from that because I'm sure nobody wants to hear
In my matching Crown Royal hat and sunglasses.
Well, ho, well, aren't you the cool one?
Oh, by the way, I just
So,
told you we're live now.
well, there you go.
Hi, folks.
So, folks,
We are with you.
if you're listening, if you're not watching live. If you're listening, hey David, James, we all love you. And Rob. The
I'm
gang's
not going
all
to be able
here.
to see you. I
If
won't be able to see you in
you're
the
listening on the podcast side, it is Tavern Chat. Every Friday night now is a live stream. Second and fourth Fridays, it's myself and Joe the lawyer doing Iron Rations. And the first and third, I guess it means it's just 5 Fridays, we don't have a show. But the first and third is myself and Glenn Hallstrom. Here
The
we
two
are
knuckleheads.
doing Dungeons, Dragons, and Discourse.
3D,
And
triple D.
Triple D, and we're not talking
World
about
of Art, 3D.
the weight that I need to lose either. Okay.
I wish I had a pair of those 3D glasses I could wear during the show. That would be great. Eric.
You look marvelous. If you're watching on Facebook, if you don't give Facebook permission, you just become Facebook user on my end. So, whole lot to the Facebook user who's now anonymous, but if you want us to know who you are, you don't want to give Facebook permissions, just type your name. It's all great. David, by sheer coincidence, I was going through the SOD podcast in order and just listened to the first one Glenn was in.
Oh no.
Well, that just tells you when I started listening to SOD, because, hey, Epi, because SOD I only listened to when Glenn was there. I didn't know SOD prior to Glenn Hallstrom.
What a guy. What a guy. Thanks.
Well, you know.
Then again,
So,
yeah.
before we delve into our what's going to be, I guess, our usual wacky D&D-ness. D&D news that I caught literally just before logging in. It's on N-World. N-World is getting it from none other than the Hollywood Reporter. D&D TV show by John Wick creator. Derek Kolsta, the creator and writer behind the John Wick franchise, has been tapped to pen and develop a pitch for a live-action series based on the Dungeons and Dragons universe. And as I believe Morris probably says, is it Morris that wrote this article? Probably. It basically says, affectionately referred to by fans as D&D, the game is known for its wars, treasure hunts, campaigns, camaraderie, and reversals of fortune, all
Good
in a
lot of
setting that combines humans, elves, orcs, and hundreds of other creatures. The game famously uses multi-sided dice in gameplay to further the imaginary story and is overseen by a host known as the Dungeon Master. Now,
who's the 55-year-old overweight guy with a beard and Cheetos on his breath.
well, yeah, it could be. Now, here's the thing. Again, the 5 minutes before Glenn and I logged in, I had mentioned this to Glenn. There's very little details on what it is, and it looks like this guy's been tapped to pitch it. Now, he's a name in the industry. He's got some name recognition, I would guess, from working on the John Wick franchise or creating it. But I don't think that Dungeons and Dragons is generally known for its wars. I don't I might have missed that. Maybe somebody else could listen. There was there Greyhawk Wars, of course. Was there the battle system? Probably the worst fucking battle rules you could have shoehorned into that fucking system. Yes, they existed, but no, that's the way of somebody who just goes, give me some keywords about Dungeons and Dragons for the search engine. I mean for the article. It was cringeworthy. And yes, Rob, the Dungeon Master. And for those saying, like David, that the cartoon, the D&D cartoon, was awful, it was awful in a really fun way. So,
well, it was as good as standards and practices let it be.
Right. Well, you back then. Listen, I don't. G.I. Joe cartoon was. I was old for it, but my mother was babysitting at the time. And, when you're babysitting for younger kids, you come home from high school, you're stuck watching the younger kid shows, and they would watch G.I. Joe. And you know what? I actually liked the G.I. Joe cartoons, but nobody ever got hurt, really. I don't think the lasers ever hit anybody. And they were like,
Remember way back in the 70s and 80s when DC Comics was putting out the Dungeons and Dragons comic books?
That was in the 80s. That was 80s. It wasn't that. It was the 80s.
Yeah, I remember that like compilation. Yeah. And they did like Forgotten Realms and Dragonlance. Wouldn't it be neat if DC could pick that up for a cartoon series? What they do now, the way they do it now with the DC. With the DC Universe, wouldn't that be neat to have a Dungeons and Dragons cartoon done by them? The same guys who do like Batman animated series?
Well, here, when it comes to the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon, remember the last cartoon we had for D&D was the Dragonlance one. And it's one of those DVDs that I own, and I've owned it for years. I've never broken the plastic. I've seen trailers online, and I'm like, I don't know if I can handle this. Now, our anonymous Facebook user is saying maybe the War of the Lance. It could be. I mean, I guess if you're going to do a live action series, probably I'm going to guess for Netflix or Amazon Prime, because those are your two main streaming services. You would need to have a major background story going on. It just can't be your regular D&D campaign to go out there, kill things, and take their shit, because you tend to need more than that. The Witcher has more than that going on, right?
That's true.
And The Witcher is about as D&D as I've seen in any of these. Certainly more than Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones was awesome until the last fucking season and the last fucking episodes. Oh my God. But it didn't feel like D&D. It felt more like historical fiction, which is not a complaint about it at all. It's not like historical fiction with a few fantastical trappings as opposed to what I would expect from a D&D movie. Or a D&D live.
Of course, we should have Dungeons and Batman, the animated series. That would be
Dungeons and Batman?
Well, he said Natman, but he meant Batman.
Oh, okay.
I'm glad you. I have the feed right here on my computer.
Okay, I see Rob talking about it right now. Dave Thompson, new cartoon will probably be in the style of that rubbish Star Trek Lower Decks animation. I have to say that I have not watched it. I've only watched YouTube reviews of it mocking it, so I have not wasted my time.
They did do Dave the Barbarian, so.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I have hope just based upon the name they've attached to the potential there. They've attached it to the franchise. It's a possibility that it actually might wind up being good, and maybe Keanu Reeves will make a guest appearance. That would be fucking awesome. You'd rather see what?
I'd rather see Joe Mantolino starring.
Yeah, I just kind of, he seems like a nice enough guy, but I really feel that his popularity in the D&D fandom universe is based on the fact that He has a hot wife, and
he has a nice game room.
He has a nice game room, and I'm sure the women go, but he has a nice smile. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. By the way, for those watching at home, I've been remiss in putting the comments up because they've been coming in so fucking fast, and I've been doing so much talking.
Hey, James is saying we got a bad, poor video quality here.
No. He's talking about the cartoons. He's not talking about us.
Oh, that's true. I'm sorry.
Because we have no video quality, okay? I've got my built-in camera on my laptop, and I got my clip-on light. We can do a facial if you want. I can check out my blackheads for those that are viewing at home.
Fire, so, you know.
Yeah, you know.
It's the best camera I have.
Oh, gee. So now, wow. Actually, I'm realizing I actually have the ability to do a screen share. Roughly, I don't have two screens. Because before we came in, the other thing is I sent Glenn an article to look at from Dragon issue number 3. Mm-hmm. And this is an article where I will have to say, if Wizards of the Coast wanted to put a disclaimer on the sale of Dragon magazine issue number 3, and now I pretty much have an idea why they don't have the old dragons up, I could understand why they would put a disclaimer on this. Because as I step into it, it is volume 1, number 3, Dragon magazine, October of 76. That's about 3 years before I came into the hobby. Notes on Women and Magic, Bringing the Distaff Gamer into D&D by Len LaKafka. And pretty much it is saying, yes, women can be any class. However, and it's a typo. It says women roll an 18-sided die and a 6-sided die for strength. No. Instead of rolling 3d6, they roll 1d8 and 1d6. So a female character has a strength range of 2 That's or 14. But you know what? Here's part of the issue from the time. It's that there's suspension of disbelief. And I've seen some female bodybuilders. I can certainly accept the fact that they'll hit 1850 strength in AD&D, or even higher. And they're not going to be Conan unless they're like slurping on steroids. But I can accept it. And then in the fantasy world, even more so. But not only do we have that issue, but then female characters, except for, I guess, lawful or neutral clerics, get a beauty score instead of charisma. Again, cringeworthy. And the beauty score is, if you're a thief, you can use your beauty score to actually cast spells such as Charm Man, Seduction, Charm Man 2, Seduction 2, Charm Humanoid. I mean, it is cringeworthy. And I'll be honest with you, I mean, if I was an adult at the time, I probably would have been cringing myself because not for the strength issue. I mean, you can argue that out, but you get it when you change one of the 6 primary attributes of the game to women can't be charismatic; they can only be beautiful.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about the times, and this really harkens back to like when the role-playing game community thought themselves more insular. Whether they were,
obviously, they were more insular.
Yeah, they were more insular. So you know, for those rare women who want to role play, here we go.
Here we go. We're gonna lower your strength. You can charm the man at the table. Go ahead. David Thompson, Gygax had never seen any Russian female shot putters. Well, you know what? You're probably right on that. And yes, Mike, Gina Carano could kick all of our asses. And I'd be happy to let her do it. I'd be fine with that.
I want to say something, but I'm not going to.
But I mean,
believe it or not.
Here's the thing. This is before AD&D. So prior to this, right, there was no differentiation about the sexes in OD&D, if I recall.
That's right.
You know, so the assumption was everybody's potentially as good as anybody else. It wasn't until AD&D that, you know, we got these limits based upon.
Well, that's when Gary decided he wanted to codify everything.
Yes. We used that. Oh, you used a D8, D6 rule? I mean, I could see plus one dex, minus one strength. If the person playing the female character wanted to go that route, I'd allow it. But I wouldn't enforce it. But I wouldn't give them the plus one dex without it swimming off somewhere else.
Yeah.
Rob, kind of tone deaf, kind of like the love domain they floated last year for Valentine's Day. Oh my God, I forgot about that.
You know, I know that this reminds me of, I don't know if they still do this, but because I haven't been into a convention seminar in a long time, ever since I started going to North Texas, but I remember one of the seminars used to always be at the cons I go to, Women in Gaming.
Okay. So,
yeah, always would be running a seminar on Women in Gaming. I don't know what conclusions they came to, but, you know, it's like almost like lip service, you know?
Listen, I can certainly say that women in gaming can certainly feel held back depending on the environment that they're gaming in. You know, if you're trying to get into a game table at a game store and everybody at those tables are, for lack of a better terminology, social misfits of the male gender that have never kissed a willing woman in their life. Yeah, you're probably not, even if they're nice to you, you're probably going to feel uncomfortable playing with them. And although I don't see that at game tables these days, I saw that a lot at game tables in my youth, because at least the social misfits grew up to be people like Glenn, myself, and probably most of our audience. We are no longer a social misfit. In a large part, I think, due to gaming. You know, I learned how to socialize with people. I learned how to get along with people with different backgrounds. Right?
Yeah, how do you do that?
How do we do it? Wasn't that gaming?
I mean, I can get by, but I still haven't got it.
But, you know, gaming got – you asked people about me when I was a preteen and early teenager. Oh, Eric, he's a very shy person. He's extremely shy. You know, I look at me now. God, beat me with a stick. You can get rid of me. You know, the reason why I came across that article, by the way, James is asking about the Amazons for the Wilderness of High Fantasy. And I don't remember them, but I haven't opened up my Judges Guild setting books for a long time.
I remember those.
But in a lot of ways, you know, it was the third-party publishers that had more of a finger on the pulse of the gaming community than TSR did. Back in the day, all your TSR adventures, the initial ones for 1E, were all tournament adventures from conventions. So they were very hard to shoehorn your gaming group into. And when you did, they were pretty crappy adventures. I mean, I enjoyed them because, oh my God, I have an official D&D adventure. I think my first one was like one of the Slaver's adventures, probably like A3. But if you ran it as written, it looked like you weren't going to have party members that survived.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was not the way to sell it to, I guess, gamers that weren't based upon wargaming. I mean, you came in from wargaming with a different assumption to your games. I didn't come in from wargaming. I dabbled in wargaming after I came into tabletop RPGs.
Personally, I've never had an issue with women at the, you know.
Neither have I.
Yeah, my first DM was a woman. So, you know, I figured everybody plays this game. What the hell, you know?
I mean, my first DM at Gen Con back in what, 93, 94? It was one of the tournaments. I never played with a female DM. I played with female players, but never a female DM. And she did something that male DMs, including myself, never touched on. And I actually have never seen, I don't know if it's just her or maybe just a different perspective that women have on the world. And I gotta get Rachel DMing one day and maybe we'll find out. But she was big on letting you know what you smelled. And it really did add a lot of depth. It added another dimension. You know, when we discuss a setting, you tell people what they see, and then you go on to what they hear. And unless I'm talking about, like, you know, 9 rats and 2,000 copper pieces and a foot and a half of feces, I'm probably not talking about the smell. But she was talking about the smells of baked bread and flour, and it really drew you into the adventure that she was running. And I wish I'd paid more attention back then, because
I'm assuming, you know, I'd be sitting at the table doing this all night.
Oh no, that was Gen Con. Was this is back in Milwaukee? It was certainly a smelly sniff fest. I still remember going back to our hotel room. Yeah, I remember going back to our hotel room, and there were like 3 people sleeping in the hallway.
Oh yeah,
you know, I was like, this is a thing. Holy shit!
I heard Frank used to be the guardian of the bathroom because we had like 4 or 5 people in one room, and he'd be sleeping across, trying to get, you know, the entry to the bathroom.
Oh, I remember going to back. Here, a true confession. Back when I was in my early 20s, I actually went to student protests, and I went to one up in Albany, and I had to sleep in a bathtub, which wasn't too bad until somebody had to come in and take a shit in the middle of the night.
I slept in a closet at one con. So 6'6" guy sleeping in a closet, you know.
Well, I'm guessing it wasn't a walk-in.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, I remember doing that. I mean, you know, we could sit here and tell old con stories all night, but
no, people, they might not want old con stories. I don't know.
I'm glad to see the more cons I went to, the more women I started seeing, and now it's just ubiquitous. You know, everybody plays. You don't even pay attention to gender or anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I run games at conventions, and I run them at North Texas Game Hole,
Tobacon,
GaryCon, ShireCon, and listen, I run Swords and Wizardry, so it kind of skews more toward males and females, because I think old school gaming is just, you know, people have been gaming for a while who are kind of like me, stuck in their ways. And I would say for old school gaming, the ratio is probably 80% male, 20% female. But I ran a session at GaryCon a couple of years ago where our 5e for Rappanath, like Mouth of Doom, wasn't able to show. And I was like, you know, I get drafted to run a 5e game, which obviously I didn't do. I ran Swords with Your Light. Right. But look, but Mike's making bad jokes. But
I know, it's Mike.
But the thing is, now at that table, half my players were female.
Really?
It was awesome. Half the players were female. Now, again, it might be a change. I'm only going from my own experience. I don't have surveys in front of me. I've mentioned before that when it comes to the Tavern Chat podcast, the listenership is overwhelmingly male. You could say that the listeners are a sausage fest. It's not a reflection on the listeners. It's probably a reflection on me.
Or a sausage.
I'm a sausage. People have to have sausages, dude. Sausages.
Et cetera, et cetera. Isn't this fun? Oh, man. Hey, I got a feature we can do in this show.
Which is?
The featured Judges Guild supplement of the show. One of which
If we did that, you'd have to have Bad Mike just ship us out like that. Like, you know, Mike, go into the depths of the North Texas RPG Con warehouse.
I got
tons of it too.
I got tons of it. Here we go. How about this one for the first one?
I don't know. Glenn, I can't read it.
Fantasy Campaign by Dave.
I do have that. I'm going to have trouble finding it. I've
got it complete with maps. Now, let me tell you, these things are beautiful. Now, he's a little short on fluff in this. In fact, he's a lot short on fluff.
Well, that was, you know, you've heard the story, you know, behind Dave's, was it the Blackmore supplement when he submitted the material for it? Uh-huh. And he just basically gave like a large overstuffed envelope or folder full of notes. Organization was not his strong point. And
actually, they did a pretty good job in filling it out. You know, Blackmore Dungeons and the City of Blackmore and all that.
But, the thing is, and you look back, I'm looking at the old Dragon magazines. And I think Gary did a great service to the community. And to gamers in general, and we owe him a lot. But man, he could be one fucking asshole when he was writing his opinion stuff. And even talking about Dave early on in Dragon Magazine, and basically, it was like, well, you know, we owe Dave the kernel of what, you know, D&D would become. But right. He had nothing to do with what D&D actually was. But we put his name on the game out of respect, but not because he deserved it. I was like, oh man, whether it's true or not.
The guy who created Batman, what was his name? The guy who created Batman, and then later on he said, well, this other guy helped.
It's not even that, because it's like taking credit away after giving it. It's one thing to say, I never gave the credit out in the first place. In this case, it was, we gave Dave credit, but we're pulling back on that. And there's a lot of people, you know, I'm trying to do a little archaeological digging through Dragon Magazine to see the evolution of what will become AD&D 1E. But right. AD&D 1E, I've heard said, was created to basically get Dave off the writer's credit and get a game out where Dave was not going to be getting part of the profits.
Well, that's one of the stories.
Yeah. The official story, they wanted a system that people wouldn't house rule, because basically we come with all the house rules you could ever need. and consistent play yeah. convention, so you knew what you were going to step into.
The cover story was, well, we needed these rules so we could run tournaments easier at cons.
Well, that wasn't so much tournament rules. It was consistent rules so that it wasn't just conventions, Glenn. It was so, all right, you're playing in your group out in California and you come out and you visit your gamer friend out in New York. You can sit down at that table and know the rules. Whereas it was going at the time with original D&D, you change cities or you change gaming groups and maybe you're playing a totally different game.
You could. I mean, house rules in that, you know.
And but it was house rule because the rules had so many, not just holes in it. They had gaping, endless pits. They had an implied combat system, amongst other issues that how to get fixed.
But they didn't understand that people are going to do that anyway. Everybody wants to reinvent the mousetrap, you know. And there's going to be people out there. Well, I threw out 90% of the rules and I put mine in here and da 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 da. You know.
Isn't that what the OSR is all about? I mean.
Yes, it is. They didn't seem to understand back then. Maybe it's a thing now, but they didn't understand that the more you have to look up in the book, the slower your game's going to go.
Right. And that is true. And I'll be honest with you, one of the best things that TSR put out was the DM screen. Yeah. And it's because with the DM screen, if you had an adventure that was already written or published that had all the magic items and all your creatures in it, you could literally go and run a game with maybe just a player's handbook to reference the spells and the DM screen to look up the saving throws. I mean, once I got a DM screen, my DM's guide no longer looked like it was going to lose pages. I mean,
that's true.
I mean, just those, the combat charts, the saving throws, they were beat to fucking hell, man. And what's funny is you had in the back of the DMG and the player's handbook for 1E, you had this perforated. I'm a New Yorker. I say perforated. It's probably perforated. Pages in the back of Bolton that was these reference cards and the same type of paper the rest of it was printed on. You would think that you would put the combat charts and the saving throws on those reference sheets.
Yes, that would have been nice.
No. Why would you do that?
I got my current set of these from in North Texas a few years ago. When you told me about dropping your book and it falls open in the same place.
Yeah.
So the first thing I did was go there and look at that place of these new ones. And sure enough, 75, 76. It's like this book has got really nice, slightly yellow pages. But when you get to this part, there's brownish pages. You've got a spot where somebody dripped some food on here.
Mine has like blood on the combat pages and on the combat chart.
Well, you take that combat seriously.
Well, yeah. It could be blood. It could have been, I don't know.
It could have been wine.
Dr. Pepper for all I know.
You even have like some Cheeto dust in there or something.
I'm sure there was that and more. And that's the thing. When you look at AD&D compared to OD&D, yes, it's a generational leap of what the quality is. But when you look at AD&D compared to, I don't know, Basic Expert or even a Holmes Basic, it's not an evolutionary leap anymore. I mean, Holmes Basic gave you a picture of what AD&D 1E was meant to be.
It gave it structure.
Yeah, and then AD&D grew like a very malignant cancer in all different directions, especially the DMG. I mean, you look at the Munster Manual, and I've discussed this earlier, but you look at the Munster Manual, look at the Was it the foreword or the preface? I can't tell which one is which, but they talk about how this is the second release for AD&D because Basic was the first release. And when you think about it, when you have something that's basic, what is the opposite of basic? Advanced, not expert. Expert doesn't come after basic. We made it come after basic because it was like, oh, well, maybe we need two types of D&D out there. But it was meant to be the beginning of advanced D&D. Only problem is, I guess they didn't give good Dr. Holmes a proper manuscript or notes to work off of this is what AD&D is going to be like. He had to make a lot of assumptions.
Yeah.
And betwixt
Well, a
the
lot of it used
two,
to check out the AD&D books. Yeah.
yeah, I mean, it was like, well, this is our goal. All right, well, I'm going to write something that will reach that, put before that goal. It's like, oh, we changed it now. That's no longer what we're looking to do. We've gone a different route.
Well, we got what we got, And, sometimes I think that's the motto of the OSR. Well, we got what we got, so we got to use
There is some of that, especially with the initial retro clones. A lot of them were like, it's like, why did you repeat that rule, which we knew was broken? Well, it was in the original rules, and we're trying to
Know.
represent the original rules. It's like, yeah, but
I'm thankful for clones like Old School Essentials, which says, and they explain in the books, in I've got the big rules tome, they explain in the book, okay, we changed this because it didn't work, something like that. And they're really upfront about it, and it works.
it makes sense.
Yeah.
But then again, and I'm sure maybe you've been asked this question by your wife. Rachel's wise enough not to ask me, don't you think you have too many games and too many rule sets? She's never asked me that because
I've
I
just trimmed my collection, my library down a third, and I
Oh,
still have a lot of books.
no. My library is not getting trimmed down. Knock on wood.
Well, there was a lot
Someone's
of
gonna have
stuff
to like
that
rip the U-Haul or take it away when I pass.
I thought
Yeah.
I'd have a lot of stuff to read in my old age, but I looked at some stuff and I said, am I really going to read this? I mean, most of my Palladium stuff left.
You see, I couldn't because,
The
well, it
only thing I
depends.
cared was the only thing,
Rachel's
all
laughing in the background about this
no,
too.
not at that.
Yeah.
All I
Like
kept
the excuse.
was my all I kept was the Ninja Turtles books.
See, I would have gotten rid of the Ninja Turtle books. I would have kept. I'd keep my Riffs and I'd keep my Palladium Fantasy.
I
Oh, and
kept
Mecha Marines.
oh, you're gonna love this, seeing as I'm like the main host of Thaco's Hammer. I got rid of all my splat books from 2E.
Well, you know what? That's really not a big deal. I mean, I would have burned them, but I don't know if I would have gotten, rid of them.
Days of me cruising used bookshops and half price books or for game books are pretty much over. I still look once in a while, but now anything I add to my collection, people send me to review. So, I mean, I feel like I've got all the games I'm going to play.
And I can understand it. I mean, I've got more than the games I'm ever going to play. And a lot of times when it comes down with me, it's like some new game comes out for the OSR. And I'm like, wow, I like the genre of this. I wonder if I can take this game book and strip it down to 4 pages and then make it something like that, an
And
addendum that's worth what you would like.
the
Yeah, because I'll be honest with you. I don't want to take heavy books with me to a game session. I want to run with something that is light. I like the lightness because,
PDFs on tablets, yes.
but not only that, the actual gaming juice is in the adventure and the group. It's not in the rules. So yes, theoretically, you
Sure.
could play an OSR style game using 5e. The only problem is there's so many rules in 5e, you're going to get bogged down in the rules, the play. So,
That's right.
Rob, Aaron's addicted to lightizing games. Well, other people have done it, better than I have. You
True.
can't do a
Well,
Rolemaster
I mean,
light because you're, I guess, like 3 out of 4 pages would have to be combat charts, and then you got the classes and all the abilities, and no, you can't. Chartmaster, just like
yeah.
DCC RPG, when they had to put out when they put out a starter version, it was still like 80 pages, right? That for them is light. You
What was
can
it called?
only.
That was a Roll You Bastard. Yeah, Roll Master.
Yeah. And what I used to do is I used to use MERPS for the core rules, and I used to use Rollmaster for the critical charts because,
Think a lot of people did that, that did it that way.
yeah.
I'm looking at my games around here and it's like, I want to play that again someday. Who knows? Maybe I can play that other one someday. I think the last game I bought was Old School Essential, the Old School Essential stuff, because I really want to do a review and they were going to send me a copy. So I bought them so I could do a review. And now they're like prized possessions. But that was like over 6 months, over a year ago, I think I bought those. I haven't bought anything since.
Yeah, you know what? I have bought a lot less this year than in years prior.
I mean, I used to take a lot of money to cons to pick up stuff that I didn't get last time or something like that, but I've been
Right.
taking less and less money every year and buying less and less.
Well, yeah, I've gotten to that. At conventions, it used to be I'd have to go to every vendor table and I'd be oohing and aahing, like, oh my God, you go to Black Blade and it's like you want half the stuff at the fucking table. But
Yeah.
in my case, it turns into, oh, I gotta put this in my carry-on luggage. Yeah, it really limits what
Oh yeah,
you
you
get.
fly. Because you
Yeah.
fly. I drive there, so yeah.
But like TotalCon, if TotalCon had a vendor's area as large and as vibrant as, say, Game Hole or GaryCon, I'd be leaving with a trunk work of the shit, and and again, stuff I'll probably never need or even read. But that
Right.
doesn't. But we're you reach a stage in your life when you go, oh yeah, I've watched those hoarder shows on TV. I'm not that bad, but I'm certainly a gamer's hoarder.
Aren't we all? And the my game collection is dwarfed by my DVD and Blu-ray collection, so I don't really think about that.
Oh, you'll see, like with DVDs and my Blu-rays, I get rid of the cases. So yes, it
Oh, you're
shrinks
one of
my
those
collection.
people.
Yeah, I'm one of those people.
Oh, you put them in the envelopes and stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't, because these are being passed down like my game stuff to my grandkids. So it's like they want to do it. If I'm up in heaven, I'm not even gonna look. I don't want to see what you're doing to my stuff, you
Yeah,
know.
just don't break it.
Don't break it.
Rob Gustafson and Rach would have to start drawing lines. You know what? I have a very understanding wife when it comes to this hobby, and
Good for you.
I am blessed. But she gets to go to conventions. Her big thing right now is that she wants to get back to Game Hole. And her main yoga spot at Game Hole has apparently moved to a new location, and now she's concerned it won't be within the, was it 2 or 3 miles radius from the hotel that the hotel
That would
shuttle
be a
goes.
problem.
Yeah, she'd have to install Uber on her phone. I mean, I only use Uber to, get food deliveries now.
I didn't know she was in yoga.
Oh yeah, she's actually right now she's taking her.
Rob says clearly she knows what you've been doing with Kickstarter. Oh my
Clearly,
God,
if
Kickstarter.
she knows, even if she knows, she knows.
I was on the Kickstarter website the other day and I looked at my account and it's like I backed that many games.
Is it still two digits? Is it still two digits? Because if it is, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, it's like 17.
Oh, dude. You're just a Kickstarter baby. Okay, you haven't.
I know, even... but still, I can't believe I thought I did like maybe four or five at the most. I did 17, and the only one that still hasn't fulfilled is Yar.
Oh God! Don't even. Oh, you had to remind me about that shit.
Oh, I get an email every once in a while from the guy saying I'm still here. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure you'll be here for a long time.
It's not like Gareth or Ken, you know. It's like some I forget about until he sends an email. Oh yeah, I backed that, didn't I? But I didn't spend very much, so you know. But
yeah. I mean, some of them you can, you know, let fade away. But no, but as for Rach, she is actually she took her 200-hour yoga instructor course last year. So now she's doing a 500-hour course, which is an extra 300. But it's all by Zoom now because thanks to the world of COVID.
Oh, boy.
You know what, Glenn? I've backed so many that it used to tell me how many you backed. I don't see it telling me how many I backed.
I just counted them up.
I can't do that. I can't. Oh, here it is. Oh, it's less than I thought. All right, 430.
Wow.
Successful ones. Those are the ones that actually funded. Doesn't mean they actually delivered. Those are the ones that are that funded. And how many did not fund? 21. You know, because some of these you just have to, you know, back, even though you know it's not going to go anywhere. Like the Rift's board game and fantasy adult coloring book gaming art. Because, you know, you just have to back because
you know, I think there's one or two I backed just because I knew the guy and you know, I did it to support him. Hi, Rob Conley. No, not seriously. No, I don't. I'm looking forward to your stuff. I didn't do it just for. It wasn't a sympathy backing.
No, Rob does good stuff. And here's the thing with Rob.
I mean, Rob produces. You know, Bucks, this is Bat in the Attic Games. Whoops, Bat in the Attic Games. This is Black March right now. Check out his stuff, and he does great maps too.
He does amazing maps, and they are very detailed.
Another plug for me.
I'm blessed that I know two of the best map artists. I don't know if Rob would consider himself an artist. I know I would consider him, I consider him an artist.
I think he's there.
But him and Alyssa do totally different types of maps, and they both do amazingly, amazingly good stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. I've
got his whole Wilderland set that I got a few years ago in North Texas. It's they're gorgeous. I just wish I had the room to put them up here.
See, Rob has to get those made into like shower curtains so I can hang them up on a wall.
Yeah, or your shower.
Oh, why? Shower. You think that you actually use it? I have Baldur's Gate. You know, well, Rachel will never put me up in the. I can't put it up in the shower unless we move to a place that has like three bathrooms.
Yeah. Well, you hit the
city. You'd be like, all right, so that's the man cave bathroom. You're allowed to have your Baldur's. And I don't blame her. I don't think that the normal people would appreciate a Baldur's Gate map in their shower.
True.
I could be wrong.
Now, if you get one of those Teagle Manor shower curtain maps.
Teagle Manor is four shower curtain maps. I don't. Four. You need to have. Yeah. You need four walls without windows. I mean, it's huge.
Wow. That's
huge. I'm sorry, man. Yeah. I don't think I could do it. And besides, I spend all my time in the shower then, like, you know, saying, I didn't notice this detail before. Look what fucking Alyssa did it to me again. Look, there's a fucking dead body hidden behind that thing where you only see one third. Yeah. Oh, actually, yes. So Mike says that if David does a Viking
Funeral.
funeral pyre and has himself burned on top of his game of books to let Mike know because so he can film it. And Mike was kind enough to film the ocean taking and returning two Swords and Wizardry adventures that I purchased just to have pictures of them being taken. Oh, I wanted them burned at sea, but being just taken out by sea. And the fact that the ocean rejected them initially was very appropriate for what was going on there.
We were
So,
going to do something with the third printing of Swords and Wizardry Complete, but I can't remember what it was. We were going to, I don't know, burn it in effigy or something. I don't know.
I think the flames themselves would probably resist. It's probably burn proof. There's a
True.
long story behind that, folks. We're not going to go into it today. It's
Remember,
nothing about Frogger Games.
you're watching OSR 3D, Dungeons, Dragons, and Discourse with Eric and Glenn.
Yeah, but Mike's like he couldn't burn them because there's no open fires on the beach.
Oh,
That's fine.
you're going to the wrong beach, Mike. You do that in
Because
California
think
all
about it,
the
where's the one place you should probably be able to have an open fire? At the beach. Because
time.
the
Yeah.
beach can handle it. It could.
Sometimes, some beaches you can't.
Well,
You
I guess,
never know.
yeah. All right, that's true.
Yeah.
Greyhawk ruins shower curtains would be cool. Huge, but cool. I guess it was over the weekend or earlier in the week on tenkostavern.com. I found a company, or it's a print on demand for it's kind of like Redbubble, but not Redbubble. And they had Lankmar, classic AD&D 1E Lankmar map as a
Lank.
rug. Lankmar map
Oh,
and other
yeah.
maps.
Yeah, I
And
saw that.
I thought the Lankmar one was the coolest one. I was like, oh man. And then I was like, oh geez, yeah. I'd have to get the
About
smallest one and roll it up when I wasn't
this? How about
using.
this one? Blackmore is a shower curtain.
No, it's boring. It's black and white. It's boring, dude. Won't
Oh,
work.
shut
Won't
You're
work. Not a good shower curtain. You want more for it than what you got there.
It's Blackmore, dude.
I'm not crazy about Blackmore.
Okay, whatever.
I mean. I never had any of the OD&D, like the box set and the supplements. I own them, but I got them all off of eBay. It wasn't like I grew up playing that. I grew up playing AD&D.
Right.
So, except for Eldritch Wizardry, which I remember seeing at Katie Toys behind glass, and I was like, my God, they have a naked woman on the cover being sacrificed. How cool is Dungeons and Dragons? But beyond that,
And they hooked
I
you.
don't have any emotional attachment to it. So,
Right.
all
I have
right.
no emotional attachment to the original D&D books. I wouldn't use them. I've got PDFs of them, and I look through them, and I go, I can't make heads or tails out of this. Thank you. Greyhawk mats. Not really, Rob. He's not dead to me for not liking Blackmore. I mean, I
He's
have my
just
issues with
on
Blackmore,
a
but
shit list right now. That's all.
no. I
He's
just
on the effing shit list. No more.
I like a lot of Game Worlds, except great.
I
But
like it a lot too. But if you're gonna put it on a shower curtain, it's gotta re reach out to me. Now, the original Greyhawk maps. I came in a folio. That I took a grease pen to them because I thought grease pencils were erasable.
oh,
And they are
oh
erasable, kind of, but they also erase like the fucking map behind it. They pulled
man.
the ink off. Because my campaign, my players reached name level and they wanted to take land in Greyhawk. So the Wild Coast, where else are you gonna take stuff from? And so until and then I got my And I got the Greyhawk box set, so then I had to clean to the maps again. But yeah.
Harn.
Harn is,
yeah.
You know what? They are. Harn is a very good setting if you like land settings. It just, I understand what Harn was seeking to achieve, but to me, it is, it's bland. It does bland very well. Don't get me wrong.
It's one of those game systems I used to see, but I never looked at, like the Sky Realms of Jorn or something like that.
Oh, Sky Realms wasn't bland. Harn, as I recall correctly, because I had the setting set, Harn started out as a systemless setting, and then it grew into its own rule set. But, I mean, it's certainly amazingly put together, professionally put together. It just doesn't it doesn't light that spark in me like other products can do. It doesn't.
I understand. I understand completely. I mean, I've seen settings where I go, eh. Earth Dawn was that way with me.
Yeah. I can see that.
Earth Dawn, it had a good explanation of why there are dungeons, but that was about it. Everything else was like, eh.
Yeah. I mean, like Greyhawk, I could still point stuff out in the map. Forgotten Realms, except for like the Moonshades, I probably couldn't point, and maybe Waterdeep, mm-hmm. I couldn't point anything out, but I enjoyed a lot of the supplements for it. I mean, it was good, but Greyhawk, I always felt had more potential than it was ever tapped.
Hey, I got a question
for
you. I've been doing a lot of episodes at Radio Grognard about hex crawls.
Okay.
And what is your opinion, or how would you do a hex crawl in a published setting, like Greyhawk or Realms, or I don't know, I think my example is astonishing in Hyperborea or something like that. How would you go about doing a hex crawl where you have to have like a certain amount of area in the hex to do a hex crawl, but if they've already published all this stuff and like Forgotten Realms, how would you do a hex crawl in Forgotten Realms
is harder for a hex crawl because again, there's a plethora.
Without having to go back to the book and look all the time, you know?
But, the thing with Greyhawk is you can take some place that's relatively disused, like, I don't know, the Wild Coast, close enough to Greyhawk, but still, it's wild. It's got orcs and ogres and goblins, oh my, and realize that those hexes on that map are huge. So if you're going to do a hex crawl, you're probably using maybe a sheet of graph paper within each hex. And within that is your hex crawl. So it's going to take your party a long time to explore. So you can have hidden stuff within that those subhexes. If subhex is the thing. So that's how I would do it. I mean, Greyhawk would work better than Forgotten Realms. Here's the other issue. Greyhawk, you can say, well, I'm only running with stuff from the folio, or I'm only running with stuff from the original box set, or I'm running from the ashes, or I'm running with the stuff after from you. I'm going to go all in. I'm running with the latest update from the Dragon magazines for the unpublished stuff from the ashes. Okay, but Forgotten Realms has been in service now for what? I'm gonna haphazardly throw out 25 years. You know, that's 25 years of lore, and then the lore that I probably know best, which is mostly the original Gray Box, a lot of it got invalidated with the Time of Troubles or whatever the fuck they called it.
Oh, yeah.
When 20 became 2E, and thus everything got fuckied. So... You know, I don't know, man. And the other thing is, I think Greyhawk gamers are more likely to allow you to hand wave shit, where Forgotten Realm gamers will be like, well, I read in R.A. Salvatore's 19th book of Drift to Drow and his two blades of scimitaring that XYZ happened here. So I'm going to look for, like, oh, Jesus fucking Christ. When your players know more about the setting than you, you need a different setting.
Right.
I think that's a basic rule of
Now, to me,
running
that's
the
what I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
game.
I interrupted.
Go ahead, no.
No, I just, sorry. Brain's, idling.
That's
Sorry.
okay. It's spinning its wheel. It's allowed to.
One of the things, that's what I loved about like the Wilderlands so much, because there's so much wide open spaces and they expect you to hex crawl. I
Yes.
mean, yeah, that was back in the day, that's a lot of what they loved it, but they expected you to do it.
And I mean, the one campaign that I really ran as a hex crawl in my early days wasn't even using D&D or AD&D. It was using RuneQuest Second Edition, which means the edition before Avalon Hill's horrible third edition. It's horrible mostly because the paper was disposable paper. But I ran Pathison Big Rubble, and it was pretty much a hex crawl, even though the maps were out on the table, because they didn't know what they were stepping into. There was so much shit going on there. I'd actually love to dig those two supplements, those box sets out again, and run them with like Swords. Oh, maybe that's an idea. Run them with Swords of Wizardry.
There you
There's just
go.
so much you could do. I might have to like, hack a few races to make it fit,
Well,
but
when the Lost Lands come out eventually,
it's out. No, it's out.
the Lost Lands are.
I have my copy that was beat up by the post office, and took.
It's out to get. I'll have to get it at the con then. But I'd love to take that and see if I could hex crawl with it.
Oh, you certainly could. There's a plethora of material available for you there. So I think it'd be great thing for you to
And
use.
I've got like the Blight and Bard's Gate and the Black Monastery and all this other stuff for it too. So
There's a lot of good stuff in the Lost Lands.
yeah, I think they give you I looked at the map at the back of the folio you get with Swords and Wizardry Light, and it looks like there's enough room there so you could probably hex crawl until the cows come home. But I was just wondering. In a published adventure, if I want to hex crawl, I don't want to constantly be looking at the book, seeing if I did this right, or if I, this city is supposed to be here. Now, a lot of people would say, well, just, do your own thing, take everything out and do your own thing. Well, that's fine. You want to do that, go ahead. But some people just want to, they want to play in the realms. They want to play in Greyhawk. They want that experience.
Listen, something like the Lost Lands is a huge setting. What you got to do is you got to read the area around where you're starting, and that initial area, read it two or three times so you know it well, just so you don't surprise yourself with anything. And then start thinking, what can I add in? What will make it unique for me? What is missing? What isn't being said? What makes sense? And I think
Yeah.
that. Don't take the book and say, I'm going to read the whole fucking book and then I'm going to run as a setting. You don't need to know everything that's in the Lost Land setting to run a Lost Land sandbox.
I don't think that, like, I just did a review of that filling in the blanks. And they have a system where you take a hex and they break it down to sub-hexes, and that's what you populate,
Yeah, that's it.
which is what I like.
No,
So
that's good for you.
I could go in the middle of nowhere, boom, and zoom in on it and say, okay, there's a pond over here, there's a ruins over here, and just start dotting it with stuff. Although not too much, maybe two, three things, because
Yeah,
they're
build
dealing
all.
with the one hex is 16 miles.
Yeah, you gotta think like Bob Ross. Maybe a little goblin tribe lives over here.
There's a
Maybe,
forest.
oh, and maybe the goblin tribe, you know what their problems are? They were trying to live on a farm, like a little subsistence farming, and they had a bad crop year. So these goblins who were trying to improve their lot in life, now they got it to rating again, and that's causing problems. So that's right. How you do it.
That's how you do it. And the what I was also thinking was taking that one hex and then look at a ring of two of hexes, or the two rings of hexes around it.
Yeah.
And just like flesh out that one hex, but sort of roughly put maybe one or two things there. So whatever direction they're going is, okay, they're heading towards this. I got to look at this hex now.
Right. Always, you know, work from where your party is at. At least be exactly. One step, maybe two steps ahead of them, or at least one step.
Yeah.
No, we might be reaching the witching hour. We've been doing this for well over an hour. Holy Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
No, Merry Christmas already happened. As is the new year. The whole nine yards.
Yeah, but hex crawling has been fascinating because, you know, I always want to say I love hex crawls, but I never really ran one because
I ran it Black Marsh, Rob Conley's Black Marsh, and it was fun.
Was it?
Yeah.
Because I always end up with these linear storylines, and my group does well with them, but at the same time, I want them to go wherever they want to go. I mean, right. Yeah, they take the hook. If they take the plot hook, okay, they're in the story. That's fine. But before then, it's like, I just want to give them – I never been able to give them choices. I think I run too many modules.
Well, here's the thing, Lennon. This is what I'm going to tell you. Your first adventure is obviously set, right? Because they don't have a choice in that. You're going to start
pretty much.
And that first adventure should have two choices where they will have an option. Do we follow this lead or this lead? And you have both of those leads fleshed out.
Right.
Okay. And then they go on to, and then from there, so you don't have to necessarily even have all, I guess it would be, they're coming from one hex, which is already detailed. So the new hex has five hexes around it. You might only have to detail out two or three, depending on what you're feeding them. And you might even be able to recycle a prior, you know, hex that doesn't get used. But, well, if they didn't go that way, and they're probably not going to go back this way, I can move this hex over to here, right, and they'll never even know that I did that. Remember, until they see
you want, it exists. Also, I'm remembering an earlier episode, a long-time episode of Radio Grognard, where I talk, and even my YouTube stuff, I talk about the Rosie campaign or something like that, where I took the compass rose and I put like a plot hook on the north, south, east, and west. And all the other points was sort of, you know, you kind of like ad-lib from like northeast, southwest, whatever. But the four compass points, you always have a plot hook they can go towards.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. And the north and one could be... Remember, if you're using a map that is six-sided, a hexagonal map, you don't have north, south, and east, west necessarily. You have maybe north and south facing, and then an axis that goes east and west, which could be one of two hexes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can do it, though.
Yeah. But that's another way. That's another way to do it. Or you can combine the two. Or mix and match like we gamers do.
Yes, we hack like things together.
Yeah. What are you tired?
I want to thank our live audience. They were active. They were good, and they didn't heckle. They didn't heckle us.
I thought we were going for an hour and a half, but that's okay.
Our audience is shrinking. I think that we've tired them out. It's a Friday night. Friday night's hard to go late because everybody wants to watch their freaking videos on YouTube and not YouTube, Netflix and Amazon Prime. But folks, this is the Dungeons & Dragons and Discourse live stream. If you enjoyed the live stream, please, I'm not going to beg you, but I'm going to ask you to subscribe and like the live stream, subscribe to the channel, like the live stream. Glenn and I do this twice a month. And the other Fridays, myself and Joe the lawyer. Wednesday nights, myself and Bad Mike. Poor David is David's 2 a.m. out there in the great UK. He's a loyal listener. If you didn't cost so much to ship things to the UK, David, I'm sure I'd be able to put a prize package together for you. Care package, but you know, postal sucks, man. Postal sucks. Folks, we are in the midst of the world of COVID, so neither Glenn nor I are medical professionals, but we're not giving advice. All we're saying is use your common sense.
But we're also COVID free, so
yeah. Okay. I self-isolate.
And don't forget to listen daily to Tavern Chat. And don't forget
Radio Grognard. Because that's old man Grognard.
Both are on Anchor.
Yes. And also, you can find Glenn. Where else can they find you, Glenn?
YouTube, my old man Grognard stuff.
Aren't you on another podcast?
Also, am the main host of Thank Goes Hammer. The best second edition podcast ever.
There you go. Actually, Glenn's the professional. I am just the amateur.
And who has the media empire?
It's not a media empire. It's like.
Thank you, David. Thank you, David. Thank you, David. I should run a game.
Glenn, best voice in the OSR. Mm-hmm. I want to grow up and be just like Glenn.
I do too.
The voice. I can't do it. I'm a New Yorker, and the New York in me is strong. Comes out heavy sometimes, like now. And
can't get the New York out, you know.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, hey, Paisan. Hey. Folks, as always, be safe, be well. God bless you all. Roll those dice. No. And you can catch Glenn, Radio Grognard. You can catch me here at
Tavern Chat.
Chat Podcast.
Don't forget the Discord.
YouTube.com/ Eric Tenkart. Oh, yeah, Discord, our Discord server. Tenkart's Tavern Discord server. Thursday nights, we do a hangout. Join us. All right, folks. Good night.
Bye-bye.